Good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome to BluePower.com. BluePower.com. Live from Hollywood, California, from the Musicians Institute on McCadden Place. We're going to have a great time this afternoon. We have one hell of a guy here, Mr. John Townsend from Tuscaloosa, Alabama, who has written some mighty fine songs and going to tell us some mighty fine stories. He's a good old Southern boy, just like me. We're also going to have Mr. Robert Ross from the Robert Ross Band. We got a tune from him on a cassette he sent us from New York City. I got to tell you something, it's mighty fine, mighty fine. We're going to preview the new Tommy Castro album. And got lots of stuff. Going to play a little Ida Cox for you. Going to just play some good stuff, some new stuff, some old stuff. And mostly we're going to do a lot of talking. So you're going to learn and benefit from what's going on. So now, without further ado, Mr. John Townsend, I think you'll remember this one. Mr. John Townsend, and that song was originally by
the Sanford Townsend Band.
Okay, and Sanford Townsend Band is from where?
Well, my partner Ed Sanford was from Montgomery, Alabama, and I was from Tuscaloosa. We had in our high school and college years, we had rival bands that played all around the Alabama, Mississippi, Georgia area in the southeast. And we eventually hooked up and crammed a band into a van and moved to California in the late 60s.
And you, I mean, you actually made the decision to get it all together and come out here and jump into the fray, so to speak.
Actually, we did, yeah.
And when you, how did you travel out here?
A van pulling a U-Haul trailer. Yeah.
Oh, my God. My God. And when you came out here, where'd you live? I mean, did you have that all figured out, or did you just drive out here? And
well, we had a couple of contacts out here. And one of the reasons that we that I was actually the main instigator of us coming out here, because these guys I knew, Greg and Dwayne Allman, had a band that was doing pretty well out here. They had signed, had gotten a record deal, and my God. And so we decided to go see if we could get ourselves a slice of that.
What year was that?
68.
In 1968.
Yeah.
The good old days. Oh, yeah. You're from Tuscaloosa, Alabama. I'm from Savannah, Georgia. We got together. I just want to fill everybody in here. John and I got together a couple weeks ago, and we sat in my living room and just talked about stuff. And you've been a musician for a long time. I mean, you've been playing since how old?
Well, like yourself, most Southern boys grew up singing in church.
Yeah.
You know? And I did that at a very young age, and later on, as rock and roll and blues and rhythm and blues came around, and I started getting those little young hormones all excited, it reminded me of a thing that Jerry Wexler used to say about the difference between church music and the kind of music that we all listened to growing up. It was God's music with the devil's words to it. You know?
Oh yeah. Jerry would say something like that.
He did.
Jerry would say something like that. Gospel has divine influence on popular music. That's a story that I found that was in relation to Black History Month last month. That it's absolutely true as far as R&B, and most of the singers today certainly are influenced by gospel music.
Oh, certainly. All the guys that I admire, and the women as well. Certainly, people like Aretha and you know, going back as far, all the singers, being a singer.
Yeah.
I was influenced by all of those people, but they grew up doing that.
Growing up in the South, what did your dad do?
My dad was in the insurance business. There's no one ever been in my family that I knew of that was in music or the entertainment business. But I do remember some of my earliest memories were of lying in church, falling asleep at age 4 or 5 with my head on my mother's lap or something, and looking up at my dad singing.
What church was that?
It was the Circlewood Baptist Church, and it was right across the street from where we lived. And,
wow.
And my dad taught Sunday school there, so we had to be there. There was no option.
There were no options. Well, I tell you what, it's a real pleasure having you here today. And
my pleasure to be here.
Basically, we had talked about your being in the music business and the record business, and what we try to do is try to explain to young people getting in the business the pitfalls. Some things they can stay away from. I was talking to a friend of mine today at a previous meeting, and he was saying, you know, I have never heard a guy go, well, yeah, I came out to Hollywood and got a record contract, and life's been great ever since. I mean, I got paid, and, you know, the accounting was right. I have never heard that.
Yeah.
I have never heard anybody say that.
Nor I, that's for sure.
And it's an amazing thing that now we have only 4 record companies. I mean, basically, there are 4 companies that control the destiny of music.
And probably about as many radio stations as far as under the corporate structure.
Yeah, absolutely. It used to be that you could own 7 radio stations, I think, and 4 television stations. That was it. Mm-hmm. That's what the FCC said. That's not happening anymore. their company's capital cities on, you know, on 150 radio stations across the United States. Yeah. And you got Rupert Murdoch that controls, you know, thousands of newspapers and magazines, and it just goes on and on. And it's a scary thing to think about that some of these people have control over what the American public thinks.
Oh, sure, yeah.
You know, it's... especially with politics being the way it is today.
Well, anytime I ever hear the word corporate takeover, or I know something's going to get screwed up. it's like I used to be a big fan and did some recording at A&M Records in their studios over there, and it's like it wasn't 6 months after some big corporation bought them out that they raided the pension fund and fired everybody, and some of the greatest music just... You know,
disappeared,
and or sources of it. Man.
Well, A&M was a great studio. I remember walking into that studio in first time I was out here. I think the first time I went into A&M was 1972, and this, you know, people are showing me through there and going, well, Chaplin did this and Chaplin did that, and he built this and he built that. It was such an amazing place. Yeah. It had so much history. Well, Hollywood has a lot of history.
I saw John Lennon record there one night, and it was one of the most fantastic experiences I'd ever had, just being a fly on the wall. A friend of mine was the engineer on the thing, and he said, hey, come on down.
Lennon's recording.
Sit in the corner and be quiet.
What did he record? Do you remember?
He was working on the Imagine album at that time.
Darn.
And he had, and Ringo was playing, and Keltner, and he had like three or four guitar players. And he would just record everybody, whatever they wanted to play, and then he'd mix them in as he felt.
Yeah, Imagine was just player. Voted in England the most popular song of all time.
Really?
Yeah. I mean, that they had some kind of vote. They all took a vote, and it was voted the most popular song, British song of all time. But I guess that's just for England. I don't think the United States had anything to do with it. But it was for England, because I scour the news.
Well, it has some social and political redeeming quality to it.
Yeah,
you know,
it does.
And plus being a beautiful song. As
absolutely.
Well, you know, it's there's some importance that goes with just the beauty of the song.
You up for playing us a tune live?
Oh, yeah, I can do something.
Oh,
like
that'd be marvelous. I'm just going to leave it up to you, since today I seem to be all thumbs anyway. We started this show 14 times already, and Jeannie's not here, and Jeannie apologizes to everybody for not being here today. Jeannie just flew in from New Orleans, and her arms are really tired. And she called me on the phone, and she said she was very sorry, but she just could not make it. And she apologized especially to you.
Well, I'm sorry. I missed her.
Hey, listen, you'll catch up with her sooner or later.
Sure.
What are you going to play for us?
In commemoration of the recent rainstorms we've been having, I want to do something that every time it rains it makes me think of Alabama.
Excellent.
That's one of the things that I'm in. And this one is called Alabama Rain Time. It's one of my new favorite songs.
Goody.
Alabama rain time, tucked into the corner of the night, slowing down the joy ride so tomorrow don't catch you from behind. Tuscaloosa daylight seemed like a million miles away. Alabama rain time, everything is in a storm of gray. High and dry for the meantime, I ain't going no place. Got my lady fair and my rocking chair, oh, and we're just watching it all roll over. There in the twilight, I see some stars falling down my way. Alabama rain time in the land of always. Oh, Grandpa gets
and the house cat's on the bread box for a bird's eye view. And spring is to the fields now, like every child's dream come true. Alabama rain time, everything all in place. Alabama rain time, everything is in a storm of grace.
That's absolutely beautiful, man.
Thank you.
That's really a nice song.
Thank you very much.
Yeah, that's definitely hear the church in that.
Well, you know, we talked about when we were sitting around by the fireplace in your living room that day of, you know, their Southern writers, their guys like Johnny Mercer from Days Gone By, and he wrote a lot more than Moon River and Chattanooga Choo Choo, and it was another guy that was a favorite of mine, even as a child, a small child, was Hoagie Carmichael.
Absolutely.
You're one of the few people I can say Hoagie Carmichael to, and they don't think I'm talking about a sandwich.
That's because I'm old. I'm old. But, you know, Hoagie Carmichael was the master of the setup.
Yeah.
And in the old days, in case you folks out there don't know what setup is, there were songs that had two sections. And for instance, what was the big his
Stardust.
Yeah. There were several groups. In fact, there was one group, the Dominoes, that did the Stardust without the setups.
Mm-hmm.
They just started. Sometimes I wonder why I spend.
Right.
But there was another group in the early 50s that did just the beginning of the song. And now the purple dust of twilight time.
Right.
George Burns used to do that.
Yes.
As a comedy piece.
Uh-huh.
But Hoagie Carmichael was a marvelous writer. And, of course, he and Johnny Mercer wrote a lot of stuff together.
His setups were like little short stories before the event, you know, to set you.
Yeah, that was, we had a nice time. I think it was raining.
Mm-hmm.
And and we sat there and sat in front of the fireplace and just talked music, which is a good thing to do.
Yeah, healthy.
When you first came out here and you first signed, who did you sign with? Who was your first?
The band I was with. Reprise Records. I remember.
Okay.
It's been
Frank
a while
Sinatra's
back,
label.
That
yeah.
was yes, Frankie's label.
Yeah, and what kind of deal was it?
Just a regular old record deal. Here's some money. Go record some songs, and we'll put them out.
We'll put them out. How many? Did you remember what the how involved the contract was? Was it a single deal or an album deal or?
I think we initially did 4 songs that they liked, that they wanted to get something out immediately.
Yeah.
And when we were finishing up the 4 songs, they already had them. They had the first one that we cut pressed up, and then sent us back in the studio to do an album of the stuff. And that was really at the beginning of an age for us, because I remember groups like some of my early favorite rock and roll groups like the Rascals.
Yeah.
They would cut hit after hit after hit, and then the record company would let them make a record.
Yeah.
Like, we'll make an album.
Yeah. But you had to have 2 or 3 hit singles
yeah.
first.
Yeah.
You know, Motown, however, we'd have a hit, and then they'd cut 9 dogs and stick them on there and sell a whole album, Dancing in the Street, based off one hit single.
Yeah.
A lot of record companies did that in the old days, because they didn't know what was going to be a hit. It was kind of hard to tell, you know. In fact, be it far from me, all the records that I cut that were hits, I never thought they were going to be hits. I didn't think they were hits, but the ones I would have bet money on that were going to be hits were the biggest stiffs of all time. And so I certainly don't know. I don't think any record company really knows what a hit is.
So much of it is timing, if you try to gear yourself to what's going on currently in the music scene, chances are large that you're going to miss the boat, because by the time whatever project you're working on gets released a year down the line, 6
right.
months,
yeah.
something else is going to be happening, so you might as well go ahead and do what you wanted to do to begin with and not try to...
Absolutely.
Force anything into the picture that's...
So many times people say, well, that's not what's happening today.
Yeah.
And believe me, I never wanted to cut anything that was happening today.
Yeah.
I tried the best I could not to. I still got a lot of demos, too, because of that. They're mm-hmm. still sitting in my garage, you know. that's not happening today. But, who knows?
I just think that if you write, if you're a writer or a player, do what gets you off. And if you're really in tune, it's going to work for somebody. I think there's an audience for everything these days.
If there's an audience for this show, you're absolutely correct. Okay? I mean, because the blues is probably the smallest niche market that I can think of. And yet, it is so big. People don't realize that the blues is poured into everything we do, and every piece of music that comes out today. There is something with the blues.
Yeah.
It's got the blues in it somewhere, whether it's gospel blues, or whether it's jazz blues, or whether it's rock and roll blues. I mean, the British guys, they certainly saw it in the early 60s.
Oh, yeah.
John Mayall was here. He had a great deal to say about that. I mean, he's built an entire career off playing the blues. And, I can certainly hear it in your work, you know. And, of course, but then you're from the South. I'm anxious to get somebody here from Twin Cities in Minnesota. But I'd be willing to bet that there's plenty of blues there, too.
Oh, sure there is. And... you mentioned John Mayall. He used to have a kid in his band with the Blues Breakers named Eric Clapton.
Oh, yeah.
And I remember hearing those records, John Mayall and the Blues Breakers, and seeing these kids. Who's this kid playing this? He shouldn't play like that. He's not, he's not old. He's not African American.
He had every guitar player there was. Oh, he had Peter Green. He had Mick Taylor. I mean, he's had, most everybody that's come out of England that's become a great guitar player
mm-hmm.
has come through John Mayall's band.
But people don't realize that. You'll see that. You and I have been around long enough to see it. But the music goes in cycles, and popular music always, and let's capitalize that and underline it, always has to go back to rhythm and blues or rhythm and blues to get recharged.
Yeah.
Because that's where it came from. Everything that we listen to on the radio for the last 20 or 30 years owes its allegiance and its roots and all of that stuff. It owes it to blues.
Rhythm and blues, gospel.
And
I was devastated when they put strings on Fats Domino. I'll never forget that. I think it was around 1958 or 59. He did a song called Valley of Tears, which I loved the song, but they put strings on it. I was outraged. But you also remember that it got bigger and bigger and bigger from that point on, okay? I mean, big, huge productions started. Hollywood and New York started churning out this stuff. It was strings and horns and brass and orchestrations. And then what came along?
Phil Spector eyes.
Oh, yeah, the wall of sound.
Yeah.
Yeah, I've been crushed by the wall of sound. But what happened? The Beatles. Okay, and what did they come out with? They came out with Money. By
Long Tall
Barrett
Sally.
Strong, Long Tall Sally by Little Richard, a 3-4-piece band playing rhythm and blues and rock and roll.
Stripped it down to its basic components.
Yeah, and went back to one.
That's right.
Speaking of one, one of the new releases that has just come out on Blind Pig Records from San Francisco, the folks from the Sty up there, is Mr. Tommy Castro. And Tommy has a real fine band out of San Francisco, and he's just done a new album called Live at the Fillmore. Mm. It's a live recording. And why don't we play a little of My Time After a While by Mr. Tommy Castro.
Baby, I think it's gonna be my time. Baby, after a while, it's your time, it's your time. I think it's gonna be my time after a while. But a thing don't change, baby, or things don't change. I got to move on down the line. She come home late last night. I don't know where she been. But the little girl's getting ready. Time. You know it's gonna be my time after a while. Thank you.
It's your time right now, baby. It's your time right now, woman. But honey, you know I do believe it. Baby, you know I do believe it. I said I do believe it. You know it's gonna be my time, baby. You know it's gonna be my time, woman. Yeah, it is, baby. Honey. Sometimes, after a while,
can you believe it? Can you believe that? Mr. Tommy Castro, live at the Fillmore. What do you think about that, John?
I like that stuff.
I do too. Stuff. I mean, the ending, it's like milking a cow.
Well, the
milking a pig.
It's all live. You can do anything and get away with it.
Well, the audience sure loved it, I'll tell you that. And this Live at the Fillmore was recorded in March of 1999 in front of a sold-out house at the famed auditorium, the Fillmore. Live at the Fillmore showcases Tommy's command of blues, southern soul, and roots rock. It's an enhanced CD, too. It has a live interview, and it has a Tommy playing one in video. So it means that you can actually put this CD in your computer, and it will play the interview. It'll play all the cuts, the concert, and it also plays a video as well.
Right.
Can you believe that?
Whoever said technology is overrated,
I swear to God,
didn't really have a handle on it.
Absolutely, absolutely. Well, I tell you what, we're going to take a break for a couple of minutes, for a pause for the cause, for this old man to go see Uncle John.
Union break.
Union break. And we'll be back in a flash. Stay tuned for part two.